Jephthah is my favorite story in this book.
Then we'll move
on to Jephthah. He's from Gilead, too.
And I'm sure you guys all read Harry Potter, and you remember the Unbreakable Vow. And Jephthah might be the original narrative of the Unbreakable Vow. So the basic story is he's saying, please, Lord, grant me victory in this battle. And if you do, I will sacrifice to you the first thing, the first creature that comes out of my house to greet me. And I assume he was thinking of that annoying dog that his wife bought that he didn't really want, you know. What else could he have been thinking of, right? And the first creature that comes to greet me.
Did the Israelites have house pets?
I don't know. I mean, what was he thinking? Otherwise, I mean, I can't make any sense of this vow.
They have chickens wandering around in and out of the
compound. Maybe that could have been it, yeah.
The first creature that just happens out of my house. And so, as the story goes, the first creature to come greet him is his only daughter, his only child.
Oh, well.
His virgin daughter.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I know. Virgins are very valuable in this narrative. You do not want to sacrifice those. Those are terribly useful.
I love that she's dancing and playing the tambourine just to make it, like, as horrible as possible.
Just to make it extra heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah.
She's playing the tambourine and singing a little song about how glad she is that Daddy won the war.
And God's like, hey, you swore.
Yeah, you sure.
It's over.
Yeah. I hate to plug anything that's not our podcast, but I've got to mention that there's a fantastic video by Non-Stamp Collector on this very subject.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yep. Google it. Non-Stamp Collector and Jephthah. Non-Stamp Collector is one word. Mm. And you all know how to spell Jephthah. Unlike most people in the world, you know how to spell that. Yeah, give up this podcast. Go watch Non-Stamp Collector videos. All of them. Right now.
Or just pause and come back in a few minutes.
Okay. A few hours. It'll take a while.
Okay.
Okay, so, yeah. So, Jephthah, he tells his daughter, you know, I swore that I would sacrifice the first thing out my door. And instead of saying, Dad, what the fuck? She says, well, you know, as you've sworn, so shall it be. Just let me go and mourn my virginity, which I find fascinating. Because, I mean, what is...
With the companions. Who are her companions?
Well, they're women, right? There are other women, other virgins? I don't know. I hope they were all lesbians for her sake. I hope for her sake she went and mourned her quote-unquote virginity with a bunch of hot Hebrew lesbians. That's just my take on it. But, you know, I visualize things in a certain way. I don't expect others to do so.
And then they celebrate it 4 days every year, so...
Yeah.
That must be fun.
There's actually, from the apologetic side of it, there is some thought that perhaps he was devoting her unto the church, and that's why she was mourning her virginity. But I have been unable to find anything about in that time period actually devoting women to the church, which I thought was kind of suspect.
Okay, and by the apologetic here, you're saying is that he didn't sacrifice her on an altar. He gave her up to a convent. Is the apologetic that they try to run there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
But I have not found any sort of evidence of such a convent that takes on women.
Well, there are references to women serving in the temple. Like, I think someone's sons, Eli's sons, like, mess around with them later on.
Okay.
They get in trouble.
Hmm.
Maybe so, she has to go do that.
Perhaps. But then the counter to that would be, like, the whole 4 year reverence of her, or whatever, would be
4 days every year.
Yeah, 4 days every year, I'm sorry, would be kind of a argument against that. Like, that would be something that more that you would do in reverence of somebody who died that was close to you. And not so much of somebody that you sent to go live in the convent.
My problem with this story is that, I mean, this is back when God was intervening with the angel of the Lord and all that. You'd think he'd have sent one down to say, hey, Jephthah, by the way, I don't accept human sacrifice. Didn't I make that clear earlier?
Right.
Like, that's something we talked about in these earlier books. We don't do human sacrifice, so, you know, skip on the daughter and, like, wait a little while. Oh, look, there's a goat. You can sacrifice that.
Right. That was the part that was kind of bizarre to me, was that Yahweh obviously didn't accept human sacrifice. And so if he did go through and sacrifice her, then it seemed kind of
oh, yeah.
Strange.
But anyway, Sibboleth? Speaking of pronunciation.
Yeah. Love this story. Because when you look at a map, Gilead and Ephraim are right next door.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of telling that they're distinct enough that they'd have their own pronunciation.
Well, let me tell you, Tulsa and Miami are right next door. But, goddamn. One of them sounds like ordinary American speech, and the other one sounds like Miami. Anyway, it so happens we live on a linguistic border over here. We're just to the north and of the south, essentially. Anyway, you didn't need to know that. I just find that. Yeah.
Well, I almost thought about when I came on affecting a southern accent to fit in, but I don't think they've gone over well.
No, not with this particular crowd.
I don't even know how to do one, huh? Me either.
What kind?
Kind of a southern accent. Can you affect?
Oh, you want to do like the long draw or something like this?
Something just like that.
It's pretty good.
Matt has it down.
So as to imply that we really are broadcasting from Oklahoma.
That's pretty good. So moving on.
Wait, we didn't tell the story. The story is that you can tell an Ephraimite because they can't say the word Shibboleth.
Right.
Without lisping the H badly. And that gives them away, and then they get killed. They get killed because they're saying the word wrong.
Yeah, I think, like, the justification for the feud is really random. They're angry because they weren't asked to join in the fight. So now they're like, we'll kill you because you left us out.
Hmm.
It seems like they just made that up to connect it to the last story.
Yeah, I see that. So, do you guys have anything between Jephthah and Samson? Because I really want to get to Samson. And I know that Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon are all, you know, important minor judges in some tradition that's now lost to history.
I don't have anything. Let's do Samson.
Yeah.
Let's do Samson. How did you... I'm sorry. Abby.
Man of the Sun.
Abby, what'd you call him? The He-Man from Mahanadan?
Yeah. I made that up myself.
That's good shit right there.
I approve.
So somebody get us started on Samson. I'm losing it here. I've had too many fluid ounces of Terrible.
Well, it begins with, I think the first chapter is understood to be in later introduction. And then there's three chapters of older stories. Because there's a really common trope where, like, a woman's barren, and then suddenly she has a magical baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Samson.
Yeah, we see that a lot in the Bible so far. It's been a recurring theme that the men are miraculously virile. Or incredibly virile, and the women are miraculously fertile. Mm-hmm. A recurring theme in the book. Speaking of which, I have to ask, does the phrase, if you had not plowed with my heifer, sound like a sexual euphemism to anyone other than me?
No, I completely agree.
Okay. It almost sounded like Samson was saying, you guys are doing something with my wife other than trading stories. You've been plowing my heifer. Not only did you suss out my riddle, but I'm pissed for other reasons as well. I don't know. That's what it sounded like to me, but I have a dirty mind, so maybe I read too much into it.
Samson is just that he was a very self-serving. Like, the whole, I want this wife, and I want that wife, and then the whole riddle so that he could get more, and then whatever, he loses it, then he goes out and kills a bunch of Philistines to get the stuff, so he's not really paying it out of his...
Yeah, I like that. He promised something he didn't have.
Right.
But he's very righteous, you know? He feels like he got the Lord behind him and everything, and all the decisions he makes, it's known that even when he sees that first woman, it was because the Lord made him love her or like her so much, you know? So he has that behind him. That confidence.
He has that Goldman Sachs kind of confidence to him. Like, I can, I can trade on, I can trade on stuff I haven't bought yet.
Perhaps the first banking crisis right here. Except in these days, he could go out and just kill all the people and collect their unpaid mortgages.
Yeah, yeah. We've come a long way since then.
Or cloaks, as it were. Clothing.
So. I'm sorry. Samson, I think everyone should go read the story of Samson. It's such good stuff.
Oh, it's great.
There is a lot in Samson that I didn't know.
I love the idea of taking 300 jackals / foxes. It's foxes in the King James, I believe. 300 jackals in the Oxford. And basically setting them on fire and sending them into the standing corn. I mean, that's that strikes me as an incredible prank. The best prank ever.
Tie their tails together.
That's great. This has to be the first case of biological warfare. We're going to send a bunch of flaming jackals into your midst. Into your corn. PETA would so not approve.
I really don't think PETA would approve much of the Bible. Especially... the whole lion, whatever, he kills the lion.
Here's the part of lion.
Right.
It's an Asian lion, so it's smaller than the African lion.
Oh,
how do you know it's an Asian lion?
My study Bible says so.
What, did the Hebrews have different words for Asian lion and African lion?
Well, I mean, that's where there weren't... I mean, there's no lions in there today.
Right, yeah. So how do we know what would... I guess we're looking at the fossils now?
Yeah, I guess.
We're trying to link these mythical stories with actual archaeology or actual... I don't know if that's okay to do that.
It was bizarre to me, and a part that was often left out of the Sunday school story of Samson was the ripping the lion apart and then, whenever he came back, removing the honey that had been... the bee's nest.
Giving it to his parents.
Right, and then giving it to his parents. It's like... First, isn't he supposed to be a Nazirite? And isn't one of the things, like, he's not supposed to touch dead? Like, what are the three things of the Nazirite vow? You can't cut your hair, no strong drink, and no touching dead things. And so, I mean, that's blatantly against that.
Do lions count as dead things, or is it dead humans?
It says, eat no forbidden food.
Okay.
We'd have to cross-reference with Leviticus, I think.
So, honey is...
Well, the lion neither splits the hoof nor chews the cud, so it's a clean animal, right?
Is it?
I don't know. I'm just going off my very naive interpretation of Leviticus.
I just thought it was a really bizarre thing to do.
To reach into a dead lion, that seems weird to you?
If I see a rotting lion on the side of the road with a bee's nest on it, or a hornet's nest, I'm not going to go and bees, yeah. I'm definitely not going to steal the honey out of it.
A vegetarian. You're not exactly known to reach into corpses for fun at all.
Okay, that's true, but still.
A lot of people eat corpses for fun, like, you know. Anyway. We'll get to that in a different podcast, I swear.
Continuing.
Samson, tell us about Samson.
Well, I was surprised when I first read it that the story of Samson and Delilah is so short.
Yeah.
It's so repetitive. Really?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I thought he was so smart up until this point.
Well, he's
Samson!
Samson, the Philistines are upon you! Again!
He must have really liked that girl.
Okay, yeah. I've got to say, at Abby's prompting, I listened to the Wiretap episode on this.
Really?
Which was hilarious! I love that.
Yeah, he has a whole book of Bible retellings. I haven't read it, but he does some on the show.
Yeah, I think I have it here on my Kindle somewhere.
Ladies and Gentlemen, the Bible.
Yeah, I have that. I have that. The parts I've read are really funny.
Yeah, he's great. I'm talking about a Canadian radio show, if anyone wondered.
Yeah, sorry, it's Wiretap with Jonathan Goldstein.
On BBC Radio 1, yeah. And Sirius Satellite Radio 137.
The odds are really good that if you've heard of our show, you've already heard of that one, but whatever. You never know. So I have a question about Samson. What exactly did he do with that jawbone of an ass? Did he heap the Philistines in heaps? Did he redden them so that they are blood red? Did you know what did he do with that jawbone of an ass? There's some of the most obscure Hebrew right there.
He hamor himartimed them.
Exactly. Obviously. That's exactly what he did. And, yeah. And if you could pay for your own translation of the Bible, what would it do there?
I'd probably write the Hebrew and have a big, lengthy footnoted discussion about it.
I think that's the way to go. To be honest about it.
No, yeah. If you know any Hebrew scholars, I'd like to do that someday.
I would like a Bible that just reverts to Hebrew when it's like totally obscure. That just goes back to the Hebrew characters. Which forces mm-hmm. you to go to the footnotes to read more yeah. about it. I think that'd be a more intellectually honest way.
There's a lot of stuff that, I mean, you really don't pick up unless you know the Hebrew. And they could point it out, but they just don't, because you can just read it in English and pretend you understand it.
Yeah.
That was snarky. I'm sorry.
Well, we do get the sense that whatever happened, there was an ass-kicking involved. He definitely... Mm-hmm.
People died.
People died in droves. So... What's the deal with Samson not catching on that Delilah's screwing with him? He says, this is my weakness, and she tries it out, and he's like, oh, wait, no, that wasn't it.
See, this is the part where I think an apologist would spring to the action and say, well, the Lord told him to let himself be captured, and then he could take down his guys from the inside like a spy.
There's always some way to rationalize it, right? Like...
Well, it's just so dumb. You don't want to have someone in your book that your one wonderful book, and you're just like, yeah. God damn it, it's my hair. All right, I give in. Yeah. Just calling the guys. I'm ready to go.
From the seminary school the aforementioned lectures that I had been listening to, he had a theory that the judges got progressively worse as it went on.
Oh yeah,
and.
Because at the end of the book, there's none at all. It goes to total anarchy.
Right, and yeah. This is one big argument for monarchy. Like, the judges weren't working, and obviously, you know, it keeps having that refrain, I think it's like three or four times in it, where the Israelites had no king, and every man did as they wanted, or whatever.
Yeah.
And what he had said about Samson is that he was the worst. And that was because of his love of women. And so because he was so... Well, and it straight up says, and when he's going after his first wife, when he tells his parents, he's like, yeah, go get me her. And they're like, no, why don't you marry a good Israelite woman? And, no, I want that Phyllis.
I want that Shiksa. That Shiksa right there.
Exactly. She's hot. And that's kind of coming down to Delilah. Like, and... But for Delilah, isn't he like in a harlot's house, or isn't that where he meets?
There
he
is stays? A brief interlude involving a prostitute. Nothing happens from that story. Nothing comes of that story, right?
All right.
And Samson visits a prostitute.
Right. There wasn't really. It was just kind of an aside or something.
And saw there in harlot and went in unto her.
Right. I love that euphemism. That's one of my. There's so many great euphemisms in this book.
We want to know you.
Yeah. He went in under her, by which we mean, you know.
He plowed that heifer.
He plowed with that heifer.
In any case, the argument was that he was so infatuated with women and just did whatever, and because he was one of the worst of the judges, that was just his downfall. And so, for Delilah, he was like, yeah, whatever. I just want to get laid.
That's a terrible argument, does it?
Do what?
That doesn't seem like a terrible argument. I mean, you do get the sense that things are going downhill throughout this book.
Right. And I would agree. I don't think it's a terrible argument. I don't know enough of Hebrew culture or language to really assess like what was going on historically. But I whenever I heard that, I was like, you know, that kind of makes sense. Like, the first judge is kind of good, and then they kind of get progressively worse and worse throughout the story.
Huh.
Which could have to do with what Abby was saying about their progression as far as...
If they just ordered it that way.
Right.
Oh, wait, yeah. No, but actually, Samson breaks the geography.
Oh, does he?
He kind of jumps back down south.
Okay.
Maybe the Deuteronomist purposely laid it out for them to get worse and worse. he was working from, like, you know, a big book of judges. And...
Perhaps. Well, he had said that it was maybe they were trying to lay it out as this is why we need a king. And so the judges got worse and worse and worse and worse. And to set up for here's David or Solomon or whatever.
I was going to say the kings don't. We'll get to that next week, but
right.
The kings
Sorry.
Don't turn out too great to begin with either.
No, no. Anyways, yeah, I also thought it suspect that so many times Delilah was, oh, what's your weakness? And Samson was like, oh, it's this. Oh, no, not really. Here's something else, though.
I even remember that from, I mean, I literally remember this from sixth grade, like hearing this story given to these little kids, and they're like, and Samson did this, and they did this, and I'm thinking, what a dumbass.
Yeah.
Why did he keep falling for this over and over? It's like freaking Tom and Jerry. I could think at some point he'd be like, oh, yeah, never mind.
I think he is just a big dumb oaf.
Yeah.
I don't...
Evidently, the stereotype of the dumb jock is not something new. It's been around for a while. You can have either brains or brawn, but not both.
Didn't they actually make him play sport at the end before he died? He was like in a...
Yeah, they had him sport before them in that big place with the two pillars.
What I don't get is how he pulls down he's put between the pillars and everyone's watching him, and then he pulls the whole temple down. But how are they watching him if he was underneath the temple?
Yeah, there is sort of an optical problem there.
Well, don't they also say there's like 3,000 people or something on top of the temple? There's like a great number of people. It just seems like a large...
Evidently, the entire thing is supported by exactly two pillars that are in the very center of a dome. Like it's kind of like the Cowboys Dome, but with two central pillars holding the whole thing up. Sorry, that was a football reference. I apologize.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That was so okey of me just then to make a blatant football reference. Yeah, sorry. So imagine a giant stadium, if you will, like the Cowboys Stadium in Dallas.
By some fluke of engineering, it's held up by only two pillars.
Exactly two pillars, right in the middle. So you can see all the action there in the center.
So Samson is the first biological warfare, and, I don't know, maybe the first, but he also uses suicide.
He's like killing. The first suicide bomber.
Yeah.
Maybe bombing's not the right answer.
I was trying to say killing, I don't know how. Uh-oh. Suicide mass murder.
He's the first suicide terrorist?
Yeah.
I don't think they had explosives back then, so it's close enough.
Yeah. It's as dramatic as things get, because I didn't have Jerry Bruckheimer back then to show them what explosions are.
So is that it on Samson?
I do have one more thing on Samson. Does, I'm sorry, this is going to sound a little perverted, but she lulled him to sleep on her knees.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's two ways of reading that, right? And moving on.
Damien, you remember whenever at that book club last, when you were talking about how we always regress into talking about sex?
I'm always the leader of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's always, like, book clubs regressing into sexual discussions. I think it's book clubs involving you.
Yeah, any conversation involving me. Back me up.
It's the most interesting thing.
That's, you saw that too, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I listened to it, and whenever I heard it on the audio Bible, I was like,
what? And I'm like, was he sleeping on her knees, or was she on her knees? And it's ambiguous to me. Maybe in the Hebrew it's obvious.
Well, you know, it's like they try so hard to avoid sex, and so then you start you want to know more about it, and so you pick out these little things.
Well, yeah, there's so many euphemisms, like instead of taking a dump, it's you're covering your feet. So you never know what they're saying. You know, the ambiguity's built in. Sorry. I'm done with Samson. I'm done. And at the end of the book, there's no judges at all.
Nope.
Israel's the K. Or Israel.
Yeah. Everything just goes to shit thereafter.
But do they cover their feet?
Well, I hope so.
So yeah, next, Micah?
Micah.
Is Micah next, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what I have as next.
Samson was the last judge. We are
indeed
judgeless.
Okay, so yeah. What's up with Micah?
And Micah has his mother had dedicated 1,100 shekels to make a graven image and a molten image.
Oh, that sounds pretty pagan.
It sounds extra pagan. extra pagan. We should mention this is unrelated to the Book of Micah. This is a totally different Micah. Right?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it must be.
Pretty sure it's a different Micah. So.
It doesn't seem like the same Micah, but you never know.
Okay.
So Micah's mother is going to make up. At this point, I think Israel has digressed substantially.
Well, that's how they frame it.
Well, yes. That would be a correct statement. We don't really know. But whoever assembled this book has definitely framed it to appear that Israel is falling apart, at least religiously.
I can be pretty reductionistic with this, I'm sorry.
There's a really disgusting story here in Judges 19, which I'm sure you guys all noticed and thought, wow, that reminds me a lot of Lot.
Yes.
The whole, why don't you rape my concubine instead?
To death?
Yeah, the old, like, let's throw out a woman to the crowd of crazed sodomites thing, which...
I'm really surprised how not well known that story is.
I agree.
You think it would come up every time Sodom and Gomorrah are discussed because it's such an obvious like precedent.
But... Well, and it's very strange, or at least it was strange to me, that these are actually the tribe of Benjamin, right? That's like I don't know. That seemed very odd to me. Like this isn't some. You know, horrible city down in a valley that is full of sin and sodomy. This is supposed to be actually part of the tribes of, you know, the loosely knit tribes of Israel. So I thought that was kind of strange. But I'm with Abby on this one for sure, that it seemed very strange to me that this is actually the first time I've ever read this story. And I was like, man, why? This is so parallel to the...
This happened in Jerusalem, right? And what they call Jebus or Jebus. I actually heard a seminarian refer to this as Jebus, and I just...
Isn't it? I say Jebus.
Well, that's like Homer Simpson. I don't even believe in Jebus.
Jebus! Save me, Jebus!
Maybe it is pronounced Jebus for all I know. Anyway.
Yeah. No, it doesn't happen in Gibeah. They bypass Jebus.
Okay, no, yeah, you're right. They say, no, we're not going to stop at Jebus. We're gonna keep going. They stop? They're on their way to Bethlehem? Near Gibeah. Okay, you're right.
Gibeah is a town.
I think it's Gibeah.
They don't stop at the major city of Jebus. They keep going.
City of a stranger is Jebus, so they move on.
Okay, so they keep going and... And the story goes, of course, they stay with this old man who is analogous to Lot, and he takes him in with all of his donkeys, and they wash their feet, and of course all these wicked men, who in this case are not sodomites, say, hey, you know, bring out that stranger, because we'd all like to have sex with him. And as this is not the Habana Inn, they say, no, that's not a great idea. Sorry, Abby, that was a local cultural reference.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a place where you can do that here. we're a real city. We have, you know, we have our gay hotels. Anyway.
It's right at the interstate, too.
Yeah, with walking distance from your house. You can walk up there for anonymous gay sex whenever you want.
I could.
You could.
I hear they have quite a dance club, too.
They do. Some of the prettiest...
Unfortunately, not made it yet. But
Abby's learning things about Oklahoma City she was not hoping to learn tonight.
Knowledge is power.
So, yeah, so, you know, it's the usual story. It's just like Lot. Like, no, no.
Well, actually, the major difference, I think, is God doesn't intervene here. There's God here.
Right,
there's... Just like, he lets shit go to hell.
This feels like the older story to me. I mean, it could be...
Oh, yeah.
It could be wrong, but this feels...
No, I don't know. I might be wrong.
But this does feel like the older tale. Like, everything is horrible and chaotic, and there's no angelic gloss on it, as it were.
Mm. Or like a theological explanation. Like, it's not telling, like, some... It's more like a story than, like, a moralistic story.
Yeah. Yeah, right. There is no moral to it. It's just, you know, back then there was no king. Everyone did as right as their own eyes, sort of thing. Sort of a anarchic, chaotic... Yeah. Anyway, so he throws his concubine out, and they apparently rape her to death, if I'm reading this right.
That's how they read it.
Yeah, the priest. Is it a priest? Is it a Levite?
It's a Levite. He's not named.
Yeah.
Which is
the anonymous Levite throws out his anonymous concubine, who is raped to death, and then in the morning he kicks her and says, "Get up, let's go." Biatch. So in this book we have possibly the most and least misogynistic parts of the Bible all in one book. Congratulations, judges, you win.
And then he cuts her into 12 pieces.
Yes, yeah, that was so creepy.
Well,
it's like, what's
you never hear about that.
No, that's right. Very rarely preached, I have to say. In all my time as sitting in very boring church environments, I don't think that Judges 19 ever got preached. I mean, I was only half awake, but I'm pretty sure I would have woke up for this.
Yeah, even the lectures that I listened to, he pretty much skimmed over this. Because I was actually really interested in that. It's like, I want to hear some talk about why they... What's going on here?
What is the moral of this story? I don't think there is one. You guys have any insights on it? Because I'm really kind of at a loss here.
So you think, like, this... Maybe this is... okay, today, people would pick out one gruesome story and say, oh, this is obviously the fall of man. Is that what this story is, kind of? Like, oh, well, this is a story to say that we are... Our land is in disarray.
I don't really know.
Or that Benjamin is a land of horrible...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Atrocities.
No, I just thought it's interesting that he authenticates his message by sending bits of his concubine.
Right.
You know, like you know I'm telling the truth because here's her foot. You know, that proves it. That proves that this story is true, that it happened just as I said in Gibeah of Benjamin. Because here's her foot, and that, you know, it's like the Big Lebowski. Like, here's her toe. That proves my story.
How does one send a foot across
Israel?
Out of curiosity, I'm pretty sure they didn't have refrigerated transport at that time. So what, you just hand it to one of your foot servants and say, here's a foot, take this to Judah.
That's a good question. What's the best way to transport part of a human body in a relatively hot and arid climate without refrigeration?
Right, it seems like that would be a rather disgusting parcel.
You should email that guy at Reformed Theological Seminary and see if he has a good take on that. I would like to ship my concubine's foot across Judah.
How exactly did they do this? Just wondering.
Ew.
And did they send it says they send them to the 12 tribes? Or they send it's kind of assumed that they send them to the 12 tribes.
I would guess it'd be the 11 tribes, because isn't Benjamin one of the tribes?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I had that thought. I was like, why did he cut it into 12 whenever, obviously, Benjamin knows about it? Because they just did it. Like, what the hell?
I think that's just further evidence that just that the 12 tribes is just kind of a late invention and that the actual, like, makeup varies. Okay. Which is why, I mean, there's a lot of civil war here. They're fighting the Benjaminites. They're fighting people. I mean, they weren't always all linked by Yahweh.
Right. The linking was I think we'd agree it's a narrative construction, trying to get them all together on one page. Literally and figuratively trying to get them all together on one page.
I think actually this is actually the only story, the next chapter when the Civil War breaks out, that's the only story in Judges where all the tribes unite and they're uniting against one of their own.
In Judges 20 when they go to punish the Benjaminites.
Yeah.
What about the dancing women that they give to the...
Oh, God, that is... There is no end of atrocity in this book.
It's like, hey, let's go. Well, first, to set the story, they attacked the Benjaminites and then...
With left-handed men.
Indeed. That's why I said, being a lefty myself, I'm totally for all the left-handed propaganda in this book. It's... Mm-hmm. Especially after, didn't they say something about us going in the temple or something? Anyways, continuing, they go in, they take out the Benjamites, and so they're kind of left in a state of disarray, and they go on to say that, you know, what are we going to do? You killed everybody, we need wives. And so what do you do when you need wives? Well, you go and steal them from the neighbors. I mean,
haven't you read the earlier books? That's just what you do.
Right. This book isn't misogynist at all.
It's not like women are property or anything.
No, no. We did. We had a great woman judge. That makes up for it, right?
It's a bit of a step forward, relatively speaking.
No, it doesn't make up for it at all. So yeah, so they go and find these dancing women and decide that they're going to be their wives, and that's all I have.
Which is basically how we do it nowadays. But with discotheques, you go to the discotheque and you find some dancing woman and you say, hey.
Maybe that's why the divorce rate is so high in Oklahoma.
Because of the lack of discotheques?
No, because because of the lack of foresight in picking a mate, perhaps?
Hmm. Well, foresight becomes less important when you're in... What's it called? Chased? When you've been chased?
Perhaps.
Like, for 19 years. And
yeah, yeah.
That whole waiting until marriage thing, it really lights a fire under people.
As yes.
That's a whole other subject.
Indeed. So that's all I got. It seemed like a rather large... haphazardly put together story that tried to explain why Israel needed a king. Yeah. To me, that's what it seemed like.
Huh.
The Judges as a whole?
Right.
Yeah, as a whole.
If I were to look at all of Judges, I would say it looked like they took a whole bunch of pieces of stories and kind of mashed them together in some sort of order to say, this is why we need a king. However, it could have very well been something later where they were like, this is why we have a king. But I don't really know.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely edited long after they had a king.
Right. Probably. That's true.
I kind of agree with Paul. They're saying, here's this narrative of what happened after the Exodus, after the conquest under Joshua. You know, it just went downhill. And this is why we needed. This is why eventually the people called for a monarch.
They didn't really continue with the Helaram. I can't say it. They didn't really continue with the complete cultural genocide. It's like they.
Oh no! You get a very different story in Judges than in Joshua. In Joshua, it's a total conquest. We conquered them all. We drove them all out. We killed everyone else. Right. In Judges, they're still here. How do we deal with them? They're still here. It's a very different sense of all these native polytheists are still among us, and we're converting to their ways and not driving them out.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the Jebusites are still in Jerusalem until David kills them all.
He was just saying Jebusites because it makes me giggle, right? Help me, Jebus!
I'll have to get to that. I'm watching all The Simpsons again. I'll get to that eventually.
That's a very old episode. It's back there. It's the one where Homer goes to be on a mission in an island.
Anyway. Really?
No.
Oh, man. So what's next? Are we going to do Ruth next, or are we going to do Samuel next? Are we going to follow the Nevi'im? Or are we going to follow the King James? Well, obviously we're going to follow the King James, right, Paul? Because we're doing the King and I. We're following Bruce, right?
Right. I guess King James it is.
We should mention on the show that if you'd like to read more about the book of Judges, you can read that at better than
Esdras at WordPress.com.
Yeah, betterthanesdras.wordpress.com. You blog the entire book of Judges there in some detail. With all that source critical stuff.
Or my version thereof. I started Samuel, but with doing the King and I, it's kind of slowed down.
I've been enjoying the King and I. I've been reading a lot more than I've been posting. Obviously, you've hardly ever seen my name on there. But I've been reading along, you know, following the project, and I'm occasionally really annoyed at Edward and others who like just preach and preach and preach and say, "Here, read what the commentary by the Christian says." And I'm like, "Yeah, next. I have a next button. Next, next, next."
And here I am listening to lectures from seminary schools.
I don't mind that. It's just, I don't know.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, he always seems to have an explanation for everything.
That is interesting.
No way they could have an explanation for this. And they do, and you're kind of like, well, it kind of makes sense, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I've been there. I've personally been there. If you really want to explain everything away as the work of a perfect, wise, loving being, you can really work hard and do that.
Yeah.
It just seems like a waste of life and a very intellectually dishonest way to deal with your, you know, source material. At some point, you have to wake up and say, I'm lying to myself consistently.
That's why I kind of gave up trying to find that one contradiction that would disprove Jesus. You know, you're not going to find it.
No. There's always a way to read it away. And they've been practicing doing so for 2,000 years. You think they're ahead of you on this. Yeah. Either you want to approach the text honestly or you don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really enjoyed it tonight, guys. I appreciate it.
Indeed. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Thank you for coming, Abby.
Yes,
it's a blast.
No problem. Thank you very much. All right, you guys have a great night.
Oh, you too.
All righty. Talk to you next week.
The Oklahoma Atheist Godcast is produced by the Oklahoma Atheists. The mission of the Oklahoma Atheists is to develop a community of individuals and families who value and promote critical thinking, free thought, reason, and a scientific worldview, and who seek to have a positive effect on the community at large through fellowship, rational discussion, community service, and education. For more information, please visit our website at www.oklahomaatheist.com.